Hello and welcome to Talking Architects. I'm your host, Matt Deacon. Over $6 trillion are lost due to IT failures each year. And this is on the way up, according to Roger Sessions of ObjectWatch. The main culprit, he suggests, is complexity. As systems grow, they naturally become more complex. But is there anything we can do to control this? Can we manage or even start to reduce complexity as systems grow ever larger? I met up with Roger at an ITER conference in New York and started off by asking him about an open space he'd just held on the subject of IT failure rates.
Oh, it went well. It was one of my favorite topics, IT failure rates, because the number of IT failure rates has been increasing, and it really seems to have reached an epidemic number, so I thought that would be a good thing to talk about.
Yeah.
Great topic. We had a good turnout and a lot of lively discussion.
Right. And earlier on in the day, you mentioned something about a UK stat, which was quite impressive.
I don't remember the exact UK statistic for IT failure rates, but it's probably around certainly in the quarter to half trillion dollar per year range.
Right.
I just did a white paper on this, which I'm going to be releasing next week, which I'd be happy to send out to anybody.
Yes.
And in there, I do break down the UK number. I just can't remember off the top of my head.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I thought you did.
I meant to, and I totally forgot.
No, that's cool.
But I can tell you in the U.S., it's about $1 trillion a year.
That's incredible.
And worldwide, I calculate about $6 trillion a year.
And are you seeing the trend up or down?
No, the trend, unfortunately, is up. The statistics that I quote in there seem to pretty clearly indicate that not only is the cost really high, but the cost is actually increasing. So it's kind of a really serious problem. A good way to think about it is probably the typical company, like a private organization, private company, say, could probably add someplace around 15% of their overall revenue directly to their profitability if they could deal with IT failure, because the rates are really high.
Right.
It's not so much the direct costs. The direct costs are really a problem, but it's the indirect costs that are actually worse.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the direct cost, you have the indirect cost, you have the lost opportunity cost. So all that needs to be calculated in. It's really a problem.
And do you have any sort of notion of why it's occurring? Why are projects failing?
We had a lot of lively discussion about that in the open group thing, but my own personal observation, what I've been studying very carefully for the last couple of years now, is what I consider to be the primary cause of failure, which is high complexity in these systems. So what's happening is that if you were to graph, see, a lot of people think that if you graph functionality versus failure rates, that you would find a relationship there, but actually that relationship is very tenuous at best. But if you graph the overall complexity of a project, so if you look at complexity over here, or you look at failure rate over on the y-axis and then complexity over here, you find a very straight relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So the relationship appears. So you can, and we've all seen it actually. I'm sure you've seen systems that have a lot of functionality, but somehow they're not that complex. They're just organized very nicely, and they don't have those failure rates. And yet you've seen other systems that have much less functionality, but somehow it's done in a way where everything is really convoluted and the failure and the complexity is much higher. And those are the systems that are much harder to work on and much more likely to fail, more expensive to build, more expensive
to maintain. It sounds to me that that's the process that's at fault in that scenario. Am I misunderstanding you there? Obviously, some functions are more complex than others, and I can understand that being an issue. If it's a complex problem you're trying to solve, a function to achieve, then the risk of failure is going to increase. But you seem to be alluding to the way that people go around trying to solve those problems is part of the problem.
Yeah, part of the problem is that people don't really think of complexity.
Right.
So, for example, there was a talk here this morning by a well-respected software architect. I won't mention names, but he listed six primary kind of non-functional attributes, things that we look for. And one was, there was performance, reliability, all these things, security, all these things. And yet complexity was not any one of the things he mentioned. In fact, in his entire talk this morning, again, very well-respected guy, and I really admire his talk. He had a lot of things to say. But in the entire talk, he never mentioned complexity as being something that we need to look for in these systems.
Suppose it's just viewed as being a byproduct of those, those non-functional.
Yeah. I mean, that's the way most people view it. They say, well, we're going to build a lot of high functional systems. Mm. We've got to have connectivity between our systems. Therefore, they're going to be complex. You know, so we need to figure out how to deal with complexity. Well, what I'm telling people is that doesn't work because we don't know how to build complex systems. What we know how to do is build simple systems. So again, if you look at the plotting of complexity to failure rate, you know, this number up here, the bad news is that as the complexity gets higher, the failure rate goes up. But the good news is that as the complexity goes down, the failure rate goes way down. So what we need to do is figure out how to take our highly complex system and break them down into smaller and smaller subsystems that work together in very well-defined ways. And now that's, you know, not a necessarily particularly radical concept because, you know, people in the SOA field have been saying that they've been doing that for a while. But the problem is that the overall complexity of your system is highly dependent upon which functions have been associated with which other functions, because that dramatically impacts the complexity of the connections and the complexity inside those services if you're doing an SOA. Yeah. So it's really critical that we have some process that allows us to figure out, you know, which is the right way to approach that problem.
So you've got the separation of concerns, you know, partitioning, I guess, is a way you could phrase it, which is good. But I guess as you, the more you partition, effectively, that creates complexity itself.
Well, that's the problem, because what you could say, you know, the first knee-jerk reaction is, let's just put every function in the service of its own.
It's like over-normalizing your database.
Exactly.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's what happens.
DBA loves it, but everybody else can't.
So, you know, because there's two things that contribute to complexity in a system. One is the amount of functionality in it. Mm-hmm. The other is the number of connections that it has to other systems.
Oh, right, okay. So is that a formula then?
Yeah, there is, actually. So I'm not going to try to do it without a whiteboard, but it will be in my white paper.
Okay,
so, you know.
Excellent.
But the idea is that as you break down a system into smaller and smaller amount of functionality, you reduce the complexity that is due to the amount of functionality in the system, but you typically increase the complexity that's occurring because of the connections to other systems. Mm. So the reason you need a process is you need a process that will drive you to the overall least amount of complexity. So it will give you an architecture that says, okay, these live here, these live here, these live here. And because these are up here and these are up there and these are up here, we've achieved the ideal balance between as small as possible systems in terms of functionality, but as few as possible connection points. So, you know, we've got the right balance there.
Yeah.
And, you know, you might think that, well, there are two ways that people typically approach this. Okay, first of all, they don't really think about complexity. But when they're thinking about how to partition business functionality into services, which ones live here, which ones live here, which ones live here, there are two common approaches. One is to basically just trust that the architect is going to do it the best possible way. Okay, and the other is kind of related to that, which is say, well, we'll just look at every possible solution. But both of those are related to a combinatorial problem, which is that as you go beyond a trivial number of business functions, the number of possible ways to partition them into services grows very, very large. And by the time you're trying to look at even a relatively small system of 20 business functions, which is really not that big in the overall scope of things, there's more than 50 trillion ways you could partition them. Now, if you were to graph those on a bell curve, and you were to look at the complexity of each one of those, what you find is a bell curve that looks something like this, where almost all of those solutions are in the middle of the bell curve, which is high complexity. It's at the high point of the complexity range. What you need to do, again, on this bell curve, is you need to figure out a process that's going to allow you to find this one over here, the low complex one. You don't want the ones in the middle of the bell curve. Those have way more complexity than you want. Now, the chance is that the architect is just going to kind of, based on their own skill or guessing or, you know, intuition or whatever they've got, is going to manage to find this one really at the low tail of the bell curve. It's very, very small. So you need some process that's going to drive that is based on, you know, understanding what defines the complexity of these things and then drives you to that lowest possible one. Because your ideal one out of that whole 50 trillion possible solutions is the one at the very lowest edge of the bell curve.
Yeah.
And you're not going to find that just randomly. You might, if you're lucky, if you have a good architect, they may not go for the high-end complexity ones, and maybe they'll even avoid a large part of the bell curve. So maybe they'll find this one over here, but the chances that they're going to find that one are quite small.
Right. I mean, so clearly we rely on the experience and acumen of the architect and the designers, but that is still has some risk to it, obviously.
Yeah.
And I think you can't ignore either.
The problem is
it doesn't necessarily replace that skill set, though.
Well, the skill set's critical. Yeah, we still need the skill set, but we need to augment the skill set by some process that's going to help us find the right one.
Right.
And skill set alone isn't going to do it. Now, process alone is not going to do it either. Mm. You need skill. In order to do this whole thing properly, you really need a good collaboration between the business folks, because they're the ones who understand how these things should be placed. I'm not going to get into the whole process now. They understand that part of it.
Yeah.
The IT people understand the partitioning. And then you need, expertise in the process itself. So it's really kind of a three-legged stool.
Mm-hmm.
And typically what we're going to do is we're going to do this up front. So we do the partitioning of the system into subsystems up front. And then we apply our standard architectural methodologies to each one of these subsystems,
right,
which we really look at as sub-projects.
Yes, yeah. Well, that de-risks the overall project, I guess, as a result. So,
yeah.
Because you can parallel.
Exactly. And like, if you're in the public sector, in the UK, it's like particularly important to you guys, because you guys just wasted about $30 billion trying to write your own
talk about
IT system.
Right, okay.
We won't bring that up. That was like,
I wasn't on that.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. So, that was like a big, big, massive, $20 billion project probably. Now, if that had been approached, and it was bid out the way most public sector projects are, somebody created this long, long laundry list of functionality and then try to figure out who's going to be willing to bid on it. Well, not many people can bid on that because that's a massive thing, So if we had taken that and kind of partitioned that into, let's say, 20 well-defined autonomous sub-projects, either any one of those would have had about 1/100th the complexity of the big one, because there's a net complexity loss. It's not just saying, well, we have 20, so it's 1/20th the complexity of the big one, because when you split things up, each one of those is much simpler because of the combinatorial stuff.
Yes, but so you said there's a complexity. You said there's a complexity loss, which intrigues me because I'm a believer in the
conservation of complexity.
You were there. So what do you say to that?
Let me give you a simple example.
Yeah.
Okay, this is overly simplistic, but at least it gives you the idea. Let's say you had a bowl, and you're throwing dice in the bowl. Okay, you throw one dice in the bowl, but the bowl has six possible states it can be in.
Yeah.
So at some level it has a complexity rating of six, whatever that means. Okay. Throw another dice in, you've now doubled the dice. What have you done to the complexity?
So is it,
you've increased it by six times, right?
36, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's permutations you're talking about.
Right. Now, if you put 12 dice in that bowl, by the time you get that dice up to 12, you've got 2 billion possible states in the bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you take half of those dice and put them in one bowl and half in another bowl, you have about, each one of those bowls has about 45,000 states. You have two of them, so that's 90,000.
But if these dice are your components or your partitions?
Well, no, the bowls are the partitions.
Sorry.
The dice are like the business functions.
The bowls come from.
Sorry, the dice are the business functions.
The bowls are the partitions. Oh, right. But you still got to have the connections across. You're ignoring these, and I think your complexity reappears across.
Exactly. We are going to increase the complexity. That's why when you partition business systems, you're not going to get the same reduction in complexity as you do with dice, because you have the connection.
That's why it's critical that
you have a process that says, okay, we don't just randomly grab these business functions and put them here. Like you can with dice. Dice don't really care. Business functions do care.
Do.
So we need a process that's going to balance it out. But that basically gives you the idea.
Yeah.
Okay, so the notion there is that, if you look at, we can't achieve that with dice because we have a connection problem. But still, just think of what you've done with the dice. You've reduced a 2 billion state system to 245,000 state systems. That's like a more than a 99% reduction in complexity.
Yeah.
So the only thing I'm trying to show you here is that the law, quote, that complexity is conserved is not true.
Mm,
okay, potentially not true if we do a good job of partitioning.
I don't think it's just where where you're positioning complexity. I'm still holding on to my preservation. I think it's still out there somewhere, but maybe the dark matter.
So there are a couple, of points I'm trying to make, and they're almost independent of each other, but they're all very important. The first one is that IT failure is a serious mm-hmm. problem.
Yeah.
Okay. Second point I'm trying to make is that the thing that's most likely to be causing that problem, there's a number of culprits that you could point to, but the one that's the kind of mother of all of them is complexity.
Yeah.
Okay. And the third point I'm trying to make is that there is a solution to that. We don't have to live with that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We have a process that we can apply to this to break this big, massive problems down into smaller, well-defined systems, and we can do it in such a way that we can drive towards the simplest possible of these sub-projects.
And
those are really the three points.
Absolutely. That's fascinating. And by partitioning in that way, it may be that the complexity is not kind of going away, it's just it's being ordered in a way.
It is going away. It's going away in the sense that if you have some kind of...
But it's the ordering. I mean, now you've got the best sort of layout of the design, then you can knock it off in different ways. You can slice and dice it the way that
you have actually lost complexity. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not just a matter of you've sliced and diced it. You know, so mm-hmm. let's say, I'm not going to try to get into complexity units here, but trust me for the moment that I've got a measure of complexity, and I can measure a system and tell you how much complexity it has, at least at the high level organizational. Okay, so let's say we started out with this big, massive system that had 1,000 complexity units, mm-hmm. and we split it into four. Okay, mm-hmm. what I'm telling you is that we're not going to have four systems of 250 units each. We're going to have four systems of about 100 complexity units each.
Right.
So not only do we have four smaller systems now, we've actually lost 600 units of complexity. That's why I say there's no conservation or investment.
Yeah.
Now, of course, the other side of it is the badness. Like if you start throwing those systems in one big pile, the complexity goes up really, really fast.
Mm.
In fact, there's a law in IT that I call Glass's Law, which says that for every 25% increase in functionality in the system, there's a doubling of complexity.
Right. Oh, that's great. Is this in your paper as well?
Oh, yeah.
Excellent. Right. So I really look.
And I'm not trying to sell.
No.
Away free. So
oh, fantastic. Well, even better. Yeah. I'll
just talk to Matt.
That's right. But I'll certainly put it's Object Watch, isn't it? So that's your organisation.
Yeah. It's going to be another week or so because I'm still doing the final edits and formatting. So.
But I'll make sure I put the Object Watch.
Okay.
URL at the bottom of something when we kind of wrap this up.
And, this whole thing really requires collaboration between the business and the IT. So this is not really something that can be totally driven from the IT. If you can't get the business cooperation, this is not likely to make it. So it kind of lives in the space that I think of as enterprise architecture, because that's the area that kind of, where IT and the business meet. So that's the ideal place to be driving this.
Yes, yes.
Of course, every organization is going to be a bit different. Yeah. But it does require high-level buy-in. But, the payoffs for this are just immense.
And that's amazing. Back to that statistic right at the start of several trillion dollars is in the US and the UK.
Yeah.
And that's just having that alone is going to be really, really interesting to sort of drive home the point. And complexity is something that's not going to go away, or in the sense that systems are only going to get larger and more sophisticated.
Not only is complexity costing us a lot, in some cases it's literally killing us.
Yeah.
And if you look at that NPFIT project, there are patients dying now because they can't get their appointments scheduled fast enough.
Mm.
And the reason for that is because nobody dealt with the complexity of that system from the beginning.
Right.
They just said, it's a complex thing, we can't do anything about it. That's not true, you can do something about it.
Brilliant. Well, fingers crossed we can. I look forward to it. And you have a book about this as well that goes through the science and maths.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it's a little older. It's a little bit more out of date because I finished writing that about 3 years ago. That Simple Architectures for Complex Enterprises.
Excellent.
And then the paper is kind of like a major update on the book.
Oh, brilliant. Right. Well, look forward to that. And
good.
Thank you very much for a really enlightening session. So I'll get my dice out.
Oh, good.